stewardship season. No doubt in the fall, because our ancestors raised crops, and when they were asked to donate, they did so from their herds and from the things they grew. Thus, the church and the body of faith was sustained, and the economy and all those who participated went on about life. And we continue that in this season of harvest, thinking together ahead about God and his blessings and how we hope to participate, to support in the year just ahead of us. Sometimes we emphasize time and talent equally, but our church is so good about sharing talents, hence Nancy's wonderful artwork, and as you look around, all the talents that are shared by liturgists who participate, by those who provide flowers, those who do banners and paraments. We're a great church about pooling our time and talents on behalf of God's work here. Today I want to talk more about treasure, about the need for all of us to be financially involved in what goes on. This is not always an easy topic either for ministers or for lay people. I had a good friend who was part of a follow-up campaign. This was a medium-sized church in Atlanta. After Commitment Sunday and several other Sundays had passed by, we sent out teams 2x2, which has a nice biblical ring, to call on those families from whom we had not heard. It's a common practice in churches to stay in touch with people. My friend Nick was exactly the kind of person you would want to go. Genuine in heart, easy with people, personable with any situation. He and his partner pulled into the driveway that night and hit the family dog with their car. Let me say, it won't be as hard to talk to you about money as it was for Nick and his friend. I want to emphasize several things about participation. Ministers always do this, don't they? They like alliteration. Full participation, fair, farsighted, family, and fruitful for participation. That's where we're going to go in these brief remarks. Full participation. 10 years ago, when we found ourselves on the curb and were trying to reform ourselves as a church, I was asked to speak, and I told the story. When I was a child, Little League began in Dalton. I was part of the first team, the Presbyterian Blue Hose. Really, White Sox, Red Sox, Blue Hose. Nevertheless, the Blue Hose fought with spirit, and every year that I played, we finished second. Because we did not have the power hitters, Kelly McCutcheon, not the one our age, but his father, lawyer here and athlete at the university, was the coach of the team, and we tried mightily, and we finished second, not lacking in his spirit. He would always get in the coach's box at third base, be a batter, be a batter, be a batter, hands clapping, and if we ever made contact with the ball, it would be go, 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 just propelling us down the first baseline. And should we ever round third, he was like a windmill, come on, come on, come on, come on. You get the picture. So, second place finishes 2 or 3 years in a row, and then we graduated to Pony League. Now, the Pony League did not have a stadium with a fence. It was just a field, still exists out on Morris Street. There, we had a backstop, and we had base pads worn in the grass and something of a pitcher's mound, but there was no fence. What that meant was that our team, lacking in power, could simply back up now and catch the long fly balls that other teams hit. And blessed with speed, when we hit a ball, because there was no fence to stop it, a single could be a double, a triple, even a home run if it was hard enough hit. So now, suddenly, we won the pennant. Not because we had big hitters, but because everybody who stepped up got the same encouragement. Be a batter, be a batter, be a batter. 10 years ago, when I gave this little pep talk, Our objective was for everybody in our newly reformed church to participate in some way, to be a batter, to be a batter. And 100% of the people who attended made some kind of commitment, greater or lesser, of course, depending on our circumstances. I think in many ways we're at that point again, 10 years now further down the road, but all of us, each one of us, called to participate in some way. Now, how shall we do that? There's an old story about these three brothers whose father, very ill and near the end, called them into his room and said, "When I die," as a gesture to indicate that you didn't love me because of my money, but because of myself, "I'd like at the funeral for each of you to come forward and to put $10,000 into the casket with me." Well, they nodded agreeably. Sadly, the day came. The coffin was left over long enough for people to view and for the sons to come forward. And the first came forward with an envelope containing $10,000 and put it in. And the second son likewise. And the third son, who had always been something of a rebel, came slowly forward, put in a check for $30,000, and withdrew the envelopes. I say all that to say fair participation is when we all join together in the spirit of contribution. These are not easier times for people, for some especially hard. I remember the story of Bob Lupton, who ran a housing ministry in downtown Atlanta. One of my churches helped him over several years to build houses, a little bit like Habitat. And then the folks who would occupy these would come every month and make a payment toward the purchase of the house. Bob Lupton told this story. He said, "We had put somebody in a house, nice folks. Everybody we served lived marginally. So this woman came one month and said, I'm not going to be able to pay this time because times are hard and I just can't come up with the money." And Bob Lupton said to her, "Well, that's okay. Do me one favor." And he looked out the window and he said, "See that van down there? The woman who owns that van will be the next recipient of a house. If you would just walk down there and tap on the window and tell her and her three children who are living in that van that they'll need to wait another month because you don't have the money to pay," she'd back the next day with the money. Hard times, but hard for everybody, and important for us, blessed as we are, to participate. I also encourage you to think farsightedly about participation. In the 10 years that we have been here, you have been generous. And I think about the Millers, Jimmy Miller, who never knew this congregation, but who, looking ahead, made a will. And when Marjorie passed away, that money came with the family, blessing us with their ongoing participation. Bill Maples, who died never having been married, estranged from his family, left half of what he was worth to the church for our ongoing work. And a tree grows in our side yard because we remember Bill and his gifts. Lillian Hollis was our hostess for many, many years. And when it looked like we would not have the money to build out the fellowship room we enjoy now, her family, all four of the children, came forward and provided the impetus for us to have that room and to enjoy it. And this afternoon, when a hospital group comes to talk about their hospice ministry, it's an example of how we, having been blessed, are able to share with others. I remember all those who participated along with Fran and Bob Lewis in the acquisition of the organ. So many ways that you have been generous and will be again. And now a kind of call for family participation. I have been so grateful for you in your prayers about little Cecilia, who is back in the hospital again, a little child who was born very prematurely, for those of you who may not know, and who has struggled with one health issue after another, and came home and was home for a matter of a few weeks, and then called in again, seriously ill, and her parents with her now. There is a GoFundMe page for that family, and if you feel inclined, you can imagine young parents, both teachers, speaks for itself. And I will speak on behalf of our two Adams. The front of your bulletin, the handsome picture that Nancy did, shows on the tree apples. Both our Adams in the choir got lemons instead. Both cars failed. If you feel so inclined to make a contribution, there are funds gathering here at the church to help them with transportation. Now, having said something about full, fair, far-sighted, and family participation, let me say something about fruitful participation. If you look at the front of the bulletin, it is really self-explanatory, though preachers rarely ever let things go without a few words. The image here shows the fact that the institutional church itself is the trunk of the good work that we do in the community. You see there that the trunk reflects all of the costs it takes for the church to operate. In Christian education, to make repairs, to keep the building in good shape, to pay the staff for equipment and insurance, and for child care workers, and all those other things, they are necessary expenses, and we pay them gladly because of all we get from being able to come here, being together, worshiping God. And then beyond that, the fruit of the tree is what we share with others in God's name. My eye falls on Camp AIM. 2 weeks every summer, we cook meals for children who've been abused. We give money to the Emory Center, where we celebrate the inclusive nature of our community, led by Presbyterians over many years. There are Girl Scouts and the Red Cross and various and other worthwhile things. Drug court that Jack Partain helped to begin. Friendship House that we help along the way. You see there many, many efforts that we are able to do because we pool our resources and the mission committee directs where they shall go. That's how the church has always operated. How society operates. We are known by our fruits. And our church has always been generous in what it did in the community. Generous both with our dollars, but with our leadership. I look around the room and see so many people who have been involved in worthwhile efforts outside their occupations as a way of making Dalton a better place to live. Well, it's pretty much that simple. I would add that our giving over years, and you'll see some of this when your mailing arrives about the stewardship program, we'd be looking for a new pastor, and whoever she or he is, we'll look to see how is the church involved in the community. How do people there give to support the mission of the church inside the walls and beyond? And they'll know something of that story at the end of our stewardship season. Keep that in mind. We have a proud history and we'll respond again. I have every confidence. But it's important for people on the receiving end to know that there are Presbyterians who always keep them in mind. One of my favorite illustrations is from Scotland. A coal mine and miners inside, and there's an explosion. Who knows why? It just happens periodically in mines, and smoke billows out, and the village gathers, as small villages do around the mouth of the mine. And when the soot slows down, they realize that somebody will have to have to go inside. And they wait awkwardly, as you might imagine. And then a man steps forward and says, "I will go inside, but you must hold the rope." In many ways, that's what we do. All of the individuals and the agencies here who day to day, face to face with poverty, we, when we are not involved in that way, hold the rope so that they can go down to see what the human need is and to try to meet it. That's what our stewardship is all about. In the name of the Father and the Son, Holy Spirit, amen.